Welcome back to the Simply Authentic Podcast. I'm Angie Mullings.
And I'm Tanya Murfin. And
Happy
New Year!
We're excited for 2025.
Welcome to 2025. Yeah. We are. Angie and I are, we are always ready to get a new year started.
Yes, yeah.
And so for the first episode of this year, we're going to kind of do a mashup of 2024. Mm-hmm. And we're going to give you snippets of our most favorite or most memorable.
I think it's really poignant moments that we, yes, in our conversations that we had with some individuals throughout the year. And we think, yes, all of our guests were wonderful and our topics were wonderful, but there, we just have picked out a few really poignant remarks, thoughts, that we want you to, and perhaps that will, yeah, entice you to go back and listen to the full episode, yeah, if you haven't already.
Agree. So, Angie, I'm going to roll us out here.
Yeah.
And we're going to start with time blocking. And Lori Robertson taught us how to tell our story and take it further and faster. And so we heard her really teach us to look inside of ourselves and be able to tell our story better.
Mm-hmm.
The time blocking can change how you show up every day. And I think you and I have figured that out in our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Time blocking is so important. We learned about, yeah, communicating with others and how your face might say something different than what your mouth would say.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So we always want to be watching or thinking about, how am I looking right now before I communicate what I'm thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And when the last time you stopped to listen to yourself, so communicating is so important. Are you stopping to listen to yourself? We heard from Erin D'Anastasio. She told us about LORE and the, mm-hmm, Hatch Foundation, mm-hmm, that's going on here in the Ozarks,
mm-hmm,
and a window into our Ozarks evolution and our local future transformation. Go back and listen to that one if you want to know what's happening here in the Ozarks. We also heard from Teresa Mealy, a local functional medicine practitioner, and she taught us that perimenopause is actually from ages 37 to 55 on average in the average female, and how it starts to affect the female body. So if you're interested in knowing what is happening with my body at this age, go back and listen to Teresa Mealy's podcast.
Yeah. And that was just in the first 6 months.
Correct.
So as we turn the calendar to July, we had Tom Douglas on, who is the owner of J Mark, and just a great guy to listen to. We were talking earlier about how brilliant he is, and he transformed his company and really transformed the culture within that company to what it is today. And it's an amazing story. Then we started talking about back to school, and we had a couple of episodes where we focused on the real world learning that's going on in our school systems, mm-hmm, and our public school systems right now.
So,
and that was so interesting and, mm-hmm, eye-opening for us, and we hope you'll go back and hear more about that. We interviewed Pam Hedgepeth, who's in charge of that in Southwest Missouri, and so she has some great things going on that you can learn about.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to the executive director at the Boys and Girls Club, and Brandy Harris is just a wonderful human being. Mm-hmm. She impressed us with how much she wants for kids to have a safe place to go, and what that is, how the Boys and Girls Club is filling that need in our community. Then we talked to Mallory Brown, who was the keynote speaker at Ladies Who Launch. We did a recap episode about Ladies Who Launch, and then we had Mallory on to talk about her walk a mile.
Fascinating,
where she's really relaying about powerful stories of overcoming adversity, and she's doing that across continents.
Yeah,
so
across the
you'll
world.
want to take a listen to that.
Yeah, so interesting.
And then we really round out this mashup episode with an excerpt from something that we did, which was big picture thinking, and really breaking down how visionary leaders not only have forward-thinking ideas, but they also bring them to life. So through strategic planning. And so that's something that we're going to end on today. We hope you enjoy this episode. And again, it's just little excerpts from these episodes that we pulled out that were most poignant to us. And we hope you'll go back and listen to the full episode. They'll be included in the show notes.
Yeah. And if you do find one that you love, share it with a friend, especially if it makes you think of somebody.
Yeah.
We hope that you have a fabulous 2025, and we hope you enjoy listening to this mashup.
Be blessed.
Women especially, we undervalue. We don't see our gifts sometimes.
Right.
It's hard to look at a career filled with learning opportunities, with successes, with failures, with lessons, mm-hmm. and narrow down to what exactly it is that you want to share.
Sure. Yes.
That's in alignment with your brand and draws the people you want to work with and helps them with the things you want to help them with. And there's a little four-part framework that I suggest where you look at, you know, where what you're good at, what you have success in, what lights you up, what other people need, and what other people will pay for, meaning they know they need it and they're willing to invest in it.
Yeah.
And looking for the cross-section there, because I might be super passionate about, you know, knitting hats for the preemies in the nursery, but that doesn't mean other people want to learn how to knit preemie hats from me. But there's something that intersects with what I have success in, what I care about, what other people need, and they know they need enough to pay for, that really helps point you to your sweet spot.
Okay. That's good.
That is really good. And having framework to figure that out with a person, that's a good starting point.
Yes. Well, especially it's just hard to, you know, I've heard it said it's hard to read the label from inside the bottle. And as high-performing, experienced, successful professional women, you live in a very big bottle with a label with a lot of words on it. And it's really hard to sort through all of that in a vacuum, just in your own head, where you're limited by those preconceived notions and also by the stories you tell yourself. But when somebody else says to you, but what about that? Or wait a second, why would you think that? Wait a second, why? What makes you so sure two brokers from different companies can't work together? And then now look at the two of you, and somebody else out there now is not thinking two brokers from different companies can't work together because they see it. They see that actually it is possible. And so it's just someone else to reflect back to you and maybe offer up different possibilities, different ideas, different perspectives can really both widen and narrow what you're trying to do in ways that can help you, you know, go farther faster.
I'm a squirrel.
I'm
over
easily
here,
distracted.
I'm over there, and I'm right over there by Kate. I mean, I can be, I'm so distractible, you know? And people in my office watch me do that, and then I get back to my computer, I'm like, what was I doing? And I read, according to studies, we get interrupted every 6 to 12 minutes. So if you're getting interrupted that much, how effective is your work that you're actually doing? So scheduling your time effectively, time blocking, so that's a word that I've heard a gazillion times over my life. But are you actually doing it?
Right.
Are you taking the time and looking at your calendar? So if you have, let's say you have from 8 to 12 free. If that 8 to 12 is just willy-nilly, you know, I'm gonna go to work and I'm going to sit at my desk, I'm going to do my work, and you don't have a plan for it, you are likely to get distracted every 6 to 12 minutes. Well, by before you know it, it's 11 o'clock and you've done a little here and a little there, but if you really looked at your list, went back to your list, and checked off all those things. And it's the best feeling to check off your list, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
So that's a fulfilling measure of whether you've had a successful day.
Yes.
Or morning or whatever. So I think that planning and scheduling your time is so, so important to stay on task and to get something done, right? You may not, you may have a really long list. If you can check off half of it, you're going to feel good by the time you get to your afternoon. And, and then you're going to reprioritize that list for tomorrow.
Exactly.
If you may be booked going to games tonight or doing something on, in the afternoon.
You know, early on in my brokerage career, I went to an international management conference that Century 21 put on, and they were talking about it was a big conversation about time blocking. And there was a statistic that for every one of those distractions, those 6 to 8 distractions you have, it takes you 12 minutes to get back into what you were doing. So you get distracted. I'm not great at math, but if you get distracted 5 times and it takes you 12 minutes to get back into the task at hand, you've wasted your whole morning, essentially.
Oh my gosh.
So they would tell us, like, you know, recruiting was one thing that they told us to time block on. Figure out a time every day, whether it's an hour or 30 minutes or 2 hours, and you put a sign on your door. And I attempted this. I still struggle with time blocking. I know it's important. Yeah. I understand how it can help me be more efficient.
Right.
And so I do have a sign that can go on my door that says something like recruiting in progress or something like that, you know. And if the sign is on my door, my agent should leave me alone then, because the gotta minutes for you and I as a broker, it's every time we want to help people. We want those agents that are coming to us asking us questions. Right. We want to be able to help them. But again, if we can stay on task a little bit and keep our focus on what we're doing, we're going to be more efficient and have more time for those gotta minutes a little bit later. Agreed. And most every question can wait 30 minutes.
Yes.
You know, it's not critical.
It's not a fire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're. A lot of people out there have great ideas. Unfortunately, they don't really know how to convey those ideas. Mm-hmm. Again, if you are somebody who feels like you are second rate in the room or second rate in the conversation and you're not being taken seriously, I think the compulsion is to try to spout how much you do know. Mm-hmm. Well, again, back to I served on this committee or I, you know, whatever. And so you're overcompensating for, and the point is not about, it's not about you. It's about getting something done, something accomplished. And you, if you've got a great idea, but all you can talk about is yourself and where you served and what you've done, and it's all about you, people are tuning you out. Yeah. And then on top of that, if your facial expressions are resting bitch face, or, you know, just you look like you're angry and you've come to the table against a bunch of opponents instead of people that you might be able to rally around you to help you achieve some particular goal. You've just now shot yourself in the foot because of all of your nonverbal cues of, you know, maybe arms crossed and your facial expressions not conveying that you are honestly trying to accomplish something. Your facial expressions are conveying that this is about me and it's my idea and, you know, this is what I want to do.
Exactly.
And it's all about them. We could talk about an hour about the word use of the word I.
Yes.
Versus we or team or, you know,
agree.
When you're trying to get somebody on your side to do something.
Agree. Just something simple that I thought about in just normal everyday life, and everybody can relate to this. The friend or the colleague or the person that you know from whatever point in your life that you run into or you have to work with every week or whatever it is, that you can't get a word in edgewise because all they do is talk about themselves and how great they are and how, or maybe how awful, how awful their family is and how awful this is and how awful that is. And they never once stop to allow you to talk. And they never once say, how are you doing? I've talked long enough. How are you doing? I could name off 5 people right now that it's impossible to be around them. And if you're that person, take a look in the mirror. We need you to engage with us as much as you want us to engage with you. And some people, I just don't know they're capable of it.
What you are involved in, and Lore, and since you've mentioned it a couple of times, I want you to tell everyone what Lore is, what it stands for, and why it's different in terms of what it's a much bigger project, obviously. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. why don't you tell them about that?
Absolutely. So the idea of the name, I should probably start there. Lore. We were really thinking about storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. In the Ozarks. I mean, I think that that's just such a unique piece of how our history still plays into who we are today. Yeah. And as you're thinking about different activities that you've participated in or people that you've met and, you know, some of the, even just like the scenery, the places that you go, mm-hmm. lore is the storytelling by definition mm-hmm. Of just kind of sharing those experiences from one person to the next. And I think when we think about the evolvement and the future of our area, that's mm-hmm. just plays such a unique piece to it mm-hmm. all. So mm-hmm. storytelling, I guess, really is kind of the inspiration behind lore, but it's also an acronym. So it's Leaders for Ozark Regional Evolvement. And I think, you know, when you think about the acronym in and of itself, it's really futuristic. Mm-hmm. So we as a group, I mean, our big goal is to, again, to be a convener mm-hmm. and to be a catalyst for really positive transformation for the future. We want to help write, you know, the next multiple generations future right. for our region as a whole. Yeah. And working as a convener with the public and private sector to be able to bring everybody to the table that, you know, appropriately, of course.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But we will be a 501c3. We're working mm-hmm. on that right now, actually. Forming our own 501c3. And again, being privately led to where the public sector can come. This is something that we learned, actually, from the Northwest Arkansas Council. The public sector, they're not necessarily like members, they're not involved at board level or anything like that, but they can come to the table because they have to be partners, right? They have to, gotcha. You still have to have that open communication with right. them so that sure. way they can see here's what the business leaders are trying to accomplish and how right. can we support that and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So that's who Lore is and what we are striving to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Great definition.
Yeah. Thank you.
So your foundation, mm-hmm. the Hatch Foundation actually has a part in Lore, or mm-hmm. is a partner. Mm-hmm. Is that appropriate to say?
Yes, yeah.
So tell us about the background of the Hatch Foundation and why you are a good partner for Lore.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Hatch Foundation, we started technically at the end of 2019. I'll back up just a little bit farther, though. My grandfather, Bill Darr, started a couple businesses, and our home offices were here in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And ADF and IDF were the businesses, and we sold them at the end of 2019. And my family came together. So my parents, Kurt and Sherry Helwig, my brother and his wife, Tyler and Kate Helwig, and then my husband, Cody, and I came together and started talking about who... I mean, that's just a big transition time, right? I mean, right. if you can sure. imagine, mm-hmm. yeah. I'm not 40 yet. So, I mean, the businesses had been around for longer than I had been. So they were a huge yeah. part of our identity. Mm-hmm. And so trying to figure out how we wanted to give back to the community that had been so supportive of us, mm-hmm. And in particular, of course, of my grandfather as well. So yeah. we decided that what we'd like to do is really focus on the inherent attributes of Springfield. We okay. started talking about how a number of funders focus on, again, going back to the community focus report that I mentioned earlier, they focus on the red flags or the problems within a community, which obviously is incredibly important. But if you don't focus on the great things about a community, then inevitably they will actually oftentimes become a bad thing just right. because they don't sure. have that support. Right. So we really have, I'm going to say, four pillars that we focus on when we think about giving back. And so those areas are arts. I think that's such a unique, I mean, Springfield in particular, is so yeah. uniquely positioned with our arts community. Mm-hmm. Our outdoors are incredible. We yes. have mm-hmm. so many wonderful attributes
we do.
There. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship, I think, is very unique here in Springfield also. Mm-hmm. And then community engagement or community involvement. It's incredible how many individuals will, you know, raise their hand and step up and say, mm-hmm. I want to help or I want to be a part of this. Mm-hmm. And so being able to help spearhead some efforts, yeah. you know, around that, but then also just support others that are happening mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, every single day I have new patients come in and they tell me it's the same story. It's
yes.
just a different provider. Could be a nurse practitioner, PA, doctor.
Sure.
It's the same story. But every single day, the hackles on my neck My hair stands up. I mean, it's just so frustrating. Yeah. But you're right. It's gaslighting. It is, you're too young to have hormone problems. Mm-hmm. You're too old to have hormone problems. They don't do anything about it anyway. And all they get offered is antidepressants. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's across the board. So people, the other problem with me is I'm cash pay because mm-hmm. what I do, there's no codes for
right.
insurance.
Right.
So sometimes people don't find me for a while. But many times I have noticed the average providers that people have been through have been about 5 to 7. They go to through 5, and it's not one after the other. You know, you got to wait sure. to get in 6 to 8 months right. now with anybody.
Right. Yep.
And then you get talked down to, you get demeaned, mm-hmm. You get pretty fearful. You get, some of them get yelled at. Mm-hmm. And so then it takes another 3 to 4 months for them to work up the courage. Then they call and they got to wait 6 to 8 months to get mm-hmm. in with someone. I mean, it is just years of our life, and we're only yeah. here for a snapshot. Like,
right.
In eternity, it's just a small little snapshot. Yeah. But here they are wasting years and years. So my primary patients, now I am getting a lot of PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, mm-hmm. where young women are almost suicidal mm-hmm. when they have their periods, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, they get offered antidepressants. But I had one young girl who was like, I think she was 21, and I see her mom. And she got admitted to the psychiatric unit here in town. And it's like her third or fourth time. And so finally I said, does any of this happen around your periods? And she had to think for a second. She goes, you know what? I had to ask for a pad when I was in there. I was on my period. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the hormonal issues,
yeah.
we just get labeled, females get labeled histrionic. But when your hormones, some of us have extreme hormonal changes throughout the month
yeah.
and it can cause bad things. But most of my patients are perimenopause and menopause. Mm-hmm. So perimenopause starts around 37, 38. If you were like me, had babies, I was on bed rest at week 18. My babies mm-hmm. were born at 29 weeks.
Wow.
I was left to make progesterone on my own. Okay, I'm old. I already was having a problem or mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been put on preterm mm-hmm. or bed rest from preterm labor.
Right.
I was under extreme stress. My mom died 3 weeks after the babies were born unexpectedly. Oh. So I'm supposed to just start making progesterone. No.
Yeah.
But instead mm-hmm. I got Lexapro. But anyway, so 37 to about 55 is perimenopause, which sucks. It's yes. hard. Mm-hmm. Your yes. life is up and down. This is usually the time when marriages can get rocky because mm-hmm. it just can, you know, like your kids are getting older and then suddenly you're left with this person and you're like, oh, who are you again? And mm-hmm. sex is gone and kids are moving around and you just are at this place where you don't feel good. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, menopausal women is a big part of that, too. And everyone's a little different. I personally started estrogen on my 50th birthday, but I have one woman, I just put her on estrogen and she just turned 58. Mm-hmm. So it's all over mm-hmm. the place. It's not cookie cutter. It's individualized. And the only way to know is if you do labs.
Yeah.
But if you're too young, they say you're too young to have hormone problems. But all corporate medicine, I call it corporate medicine, all corporate medicine providers are looking for is if you're in menopause. So yeah, you're not going to be in menopause mm-hmm. at 37, 38, 42, 45, right. but right. you're still having craziness because you have low progesterone.
If you think about how you operate as a family, you almost have unwritten rules in the household. Mm-hmm. You have a language that you can speak to, and everybody mm-hmm. kind of understands how we act and how we operate.
Right.
And that creates safety, and that creates a mm-hmm. comfort level. And if you don't have your core values defined and how you're going to operate and how you're going to behave and the language that you're going to use inside the business and your way of solving problems, as an example, if you don't have those things defined, people don't feel safe. You know, Google did a study several years back now about what creates the highest productive teams in the world. And they looked at intelligence, and they looked at team dynamics, and they looked at skill sets, and they looked at the mix of the individuals in the team. But the one thing that surpassed all of them was psychological safety. And so when you think about what it means to have that psychological safety in an organization and in a team, it's I can raise my hand when I've made a mistake, and I'm not going to get mm-hmm. shamed. I'm not going to get fired for making a mistake. It's an opportunity for me to learn and grow, and we're going to celebrate the growth, not punish punish just, a mistake that all of us are going to make. Right. And so when you create a culture both of safety and where everybody is operating with that sense of feeling, then it creates like a home environment. It creates that comfort level that you want to be around. And at the end of the day, you know, the thing that we've learned is that the good people want to do good work. Mm-hmm. And so it's our job as leaders to create an environment where they're surrounded by people who have that same belief system, mm-hmm. and who they enjoy being around. Mm-hmm. And when you make a bad hire, which we all do, yeah. and you get a bad apple in there, mm-hmm. you have to fire fast. And yeah. and when you have good people, you have to give them multiple chances and coach and grow with them and help them to understand. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in today's world more than ever, it's really important to lean into the potential of somebody's success. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have a false ceiling above them, a glass ceiling, if you will, in terms of their potential, because I think that there's just not enough of that, of a belief in what they're capable of. They mm-hmm. they haven't heard sure. that enough.
Yeah.
They haven't been encouraged, and so mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. it's something that we lean into. It's like, nope, you can do more. You're more capable. You're sharper. You're mm-hmm. you know, we believe in you. We're yeah. going to get you the training. We're going to create the opportunity. Here's some areas that you need to improve upon. Here's some areas that we want to celebrate. But at the end of the day, we know that your potential is here, and you're here. So how can we help you to realize that? And when you believe in people that much. Mm-hmm. The culture just evolves, and it is one of the greatest gifts. It's like yeah. not as much as raising kids, but it's similar.
Yeah, sure it is.
Similar along
yeah.
that
it's
way.
Another family you've created.
Yeah,
that's
right?
good. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. We started with 100 candidates. It was a national search, narrowed down to 50, then 25, then 6, then 2, then 1. And some of them were like, you know, we interviewed you as a courtesy because you were an internal candidate. And I was like, mm-hmm. you don't always have to say everything you feel.
Yeah,
right? You right? can talk behind my back. Permission granted. But I was like, okay. And then it's followed up with like every round and every interview round, you gave us something we didn't see in another candidate. But I wasn't paying attention to the positive part of that. I was just thinking like,
you heard the negative.
I only heard the negative yeah. and mm-hmm. it became my entire identity. And yeah. I totally lost myself. It had a physical and mental health impact on me. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a resignation letter to the board. I literally wrote it. I printed it out. It said, I love kids. I love this mission. I love everything about this place, but like my body and my brain cannot take this anymore. I feel like everyone hates me. I cannot do this job. I'm hurting kids because I'm losing money. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it was just awful. And then I've got people who are working adjacent to me who don't think I should be in this role and are talking about it. I'm getting calls from the national office about how people are like worried about my ability to do the job. And I'm just like, I've never felt this way, and I know that it can't last. Mm-hmm. So I print the resignation letter out. Before I sign it, one of the unique things about my office is that it's connected to a Boys and Girls Club. So mm-hmm. I was like, I'm just going to go do a quick lap, walk around. I got to clear my head. I've shared this story before, but it is so like mm-hmm. impactful for me, and I never want to lose it because there are days where you think, why am I doing this? It's mm-hmm. so hard. This moment is mm-hmm. one of them. I walk around the club, and I remember we had about 200 kids in the club at that time, and I'm seeing kids play air hockey. I'm smelling lunch being served in the cafeteria. I'm seeing a kid learn how to tie their shoes. I'm seeing staff members. It's just excitement and fun, and kids are safe. And this like little girl, probably around 7 years old, runs up to me and says, "Who are you?" And I said, "My name is Miss Brandy. What do you do?" I'm the CEO for Boys and Girls Club. And then she asked me, what does a CEO do? And then I tried to explain it in like ways that a 7-year-old would understand. So I was mm-hmm. just like, it's somebody who cares a lot about kids and who raises money and works to make sure that staff are having a good time and wants to build clubs and schools and talks to teachers, et cetera. And she looked me dead in the eye and she said, I want to be a CEO too. And I thought, oh my God, like, this job is so much bigger than like my feelings getting hurt because someone doesn't like me because I'm a girl and they don't want to give money anymore. It's about moments like this for kids where you can only yes. be what you see, and you're mm-hmm. seeing this in someone right now. You're also like, it just totally shifted something in my brain. This is not about me. Mm-hmm. This is about, I wish I knew her name, to be fully transparent. Yeah. I don't, but like mm-hmm. in that moment, I just will never forget. That was just, that shifted things for me, for mm-hmm. sure.
and just looking around and seeing everything that was happening in this place that I truly so desperately needed when I was a kid. Like, I get to be a part of providing spaces like that for kids now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, done. Then I was like, let's go. And I probably went too far the other way. I'm like, I'm wearing t-shirts every day to work. I'm not showing up on time. And I'm just kidding. I didn't do any of that. But like, I just started to really think, like, keep the mission focused first.
Yes.
Remember why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. Also, make sure you're in clubs more often because that energizes mm-hmm. you.
Probably if you were in a classroom that really focused on real world learning, here's what it'd look like. You'd see kids really engaged and having conversations mm-hmm. around a real problem. Mm-hmm. Probably a problem that was maybe brought to them by a business partner, like something they were dealing with.
Got it.
Could even be the school. Mm-hmm. Like, a school can be the client, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're wanting to do some kind of a new renovation in one of their buildings, mm-hmm. and they'd really like to get the student voice anyway. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they would put, you know, opportunities out for kids to really think about that problem. And then you've got this really masterful teacher who is partnering with that business industry partner to figure out what this learning experience mm-hmm. can look like, all while they're tapping those Missouri learning standards. Because we still have high expectations mm-hmm.
of course.
For kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about the reading, the writing, mathematical things
right.
that are, we got to have high levels of performance.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that masterful teacher knows how to tie those to these projects and these problems. Mm-hmm. So the teacher partnering with a business or industry person, oftentimes in these settings, they're facilitating learning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other piece is that kids have a lot of choice about what they want to learn about. And so mm-hmm. they get to fulfill their passions. Like, they get to help guide, you know, what and how they want to learn more about. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, with our new assessment system, the kids know where their gaps are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They can see in their assessment, mm-hmm. oh, mm-hmm. I got to work on this particular standard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I need my project to really be based on that standard that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing when you visit schools that do this work.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The kids can tell you right where they are on their learning and what they're working on and what they need to work on.
Mm-hmm. And it really, you know, I'm visualizing your story here, right, of children maybe understanding learning in a better way, in a real world way, mm-hmm. where they can actually apply that to real world experiences. Rather than the old school, how we all grew up with our math book and our science book and our mm-hmm. social studies book.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which empowers them to have self-confidence and to problem solve and to... I am so in line with this thinking, Pam.
Can you tell? It gets
me excited. I'm not an educator.
Best thing yeah. since sliced
it's,
bread.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
And teachers are empowered, too.
You know, people are curious about my process because they're like, you know, trying to even imagine how to do this. But I have a lot of faith in people. I have a lot of faith in organizations and like the way it's going to play out. I think this is going to work. So I probably jump on a story. I travel to a place. I go for it with a lot less information and certainty than. Mm-hmm. Others might feel like they need.
Mm-hmm.
True. You know, I've shown up to places where all I have is an address and a name. And I'm like, okay, let's go. You know, knock on the door of the refugee camp and like, is this person here? And they said I could come and visit. I'm here. And I actually operate that way, but I think things work out so much more than they don't. And mm-hmm. so many times I'm like, regardless of what you're doing, it doesn't even have to be travel related or entrepreneurial related, but just we're so afraid of if things go wrong. And it's really, it's so much more likely that things are going to go right. Mm-hmm. And if they do go wrong, how hurt are you really? You know, like I always make this correlation, which is odd, but because I do yoga and I know a lot of people, are curious to do yoga, but they hesitate so much because they feel like so intimidated to go to a yoga class. Mm-hmm. And even my husband, he's like, I want to go, but I'm like totally not flexible and I'm not going to know anything. And, you know, and it's like, if you just go to the yoga class, maybe you'll feel a little bit awkward, but it's fine. They're going to say, sure, come on in. And here's your corner and you won't know what's going on. And then an hour passes and it's like, you survived, you know, what was there to be so afraid of? Mm-hmm. And so I have a really positive view of the way that things are going to work. And 99% of the time they work out.
I remember that discussion. We spent a lot of money, you know, and that's one thing I want to emphasize. If you're thinking about having someone come in and help you facilitate a strategic planning session, it's not cheap sometimes. Right. I mean, obviously, you know, there are different levels, but we were at a point in our board history where we had been doing some strategic planning, but only amongst us. And sometimes what you really need is perspective from an outside viewpoint. You need a third party. Right. And it's worth the investment. I will tell you that we fought back and forth. We discussed it for a long time. It's going to cost us a lot of money. But we also have a responsibility to invest back into our association and the members that we serve. Mm-hmm. And that's in the end where we came down on that. Right. So we had, yes, an outside consultant come in and took us through the process. And yeah, that first day was a little rough because we just didn't open up that much. But by day two and definitely by day three, there was a totally different energy and I felt mm-hmm. energized just because mm-hmm. of the ideas that were floating around and the possibilities mm-hmm. of what if. He kept asking the question, what if you could though? What mm-hmm. if you, what if you? And mm-hmm. that's what I took away from that was the ability to sort of, like you've already mentioned, some people get in their own way. They're thinking too narrow-mindedly about things and mm-hmm. they can't see the forest for the trees. And he made us really dig into what was important. And I'll never forget a director on the board. He made us break into smaller groups like day two or so. And we were within those small groups supposed to come up with some ideas and answer some questions. And I was sitting with a director that I did not know well, and she wasn't being vocal. She wasn't saying anything. And this was in a smaller group. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it when you're in a room of 25 and you're not sure. afraid to, or you're a little timid in giving some response. But this was in a group of three or four of us. And she said that she didn't feel valued. Eventually we got there. She, you know, we kept asking, you know, what do you think? How do you feel mm-hmm. about this? And she really wasn't giving any input. And then finally she basically said, I don't feel like my opinion is valued here mm-hmm. in that boardroom. And we tried to figure out why she felt that way mm-hmm. and really, you know, just had a talk about finding common ground. Yeah. We were trying to really sympathize with her and try to figure out why she was feeling that way. And she didn't run for the board again. And that's kind of disappointing because I don't know that we made enough headway. But sometimes those are the things you'll find out. When you start asking the questions, you think everybody's on the same page as you in mm-hmm. terms of, I feel quite confident in the room. Everybody who's here should because they were selected to serve on this board. Mm-hmm. But not everybody does. Yeah, and sometimes you've got to get to the root of what's going on, because if she feels that way, there's probably other people within the organization that feel that way, that their opinion is not valued. And now we've got a bigger problem, and we've got to figure out how to solve that bigger problem of people not feeling like they're valued.
Thanks for listening to the Simply Authentic podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
Be sure to listen to us on your favorite podcasting app.